Oak Session number 11912, Reel 1.
Mr. Easton, Reel 1. When and how did you come to join the Navy, please?
Well, as I told you before, I come from Kemptown, which at that time was a small fishing village. And I used to spend most of my free time on the seashore. At Brighton, of course, and further along to New Haven. And in the fishing boats. And eventually I was spending spare time in the boats themselves. And one day off the Brighton coast, an aircraft carrier came in with a, strangely enough, a destroyer by the name of HMS Defender. And I asked the fisherman there if on the way back with our fish we could circle the carrier, but I was more interested in the destroyer because she was very fast. She came in with a swirl and a swish and down anchor, just like having an MG or a Jag. And I fell in love with that. And so I made up my mind after seeing those that I'd join the Navy, which I did.
When was it that you joined?
1937. July 1937.
Was it easy to get in?
Big pun?
Was it easy?
You still had to have an educational test, etc. And you go down to Portsmouth some weeks before you actually sign on, and you go through these examinations that take place down there.
Where were you trained initially?
In Portsmouth, at HMS Victory.
What was your training like?
Hard, very good, fair, the food was good. Well, it would be coming from the slums of Brighton, wouldn't it?
What was the discipline like at Victory?
Very strict indeed, yeah, in those days. When lights went out, 9 o'clock. And when the valley goes in the morning, you're out and far and rather sharp. Because your instructor, who was invariably an old chief, was through there with a stonachy. If you understand what a stonachy is, have you ever heard of one?
I have. Can you describe it?
Yes, it's a piece of rope just covered in canvas. He'll give you a smack across the seat if you don't get moving in a bit quick, you know. Now, I've never heard of anybody being hurt with them, but it's just to chase you up.
Did people resent the discipline?
Not a bit. Not that I heard of, anyway. I'm speaking for myself in my own class of that period.
Do you think there was any benefit from that kind of discipline?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it did. I never felt any resentment or revenge-wise or any other way. Like my father, he'd clip me alongside the ear hole, and I never thought no worse of it for him. None at all.
You were telling me earlier that even on the ships themselves, there was a provision for corporal punishment.
Oh, yes, there was. Yes, there was. Invariably, it's the very young men that attracted this punishment, put it that way. Generally, they were told to take their ordinary blue trousers off and put on a very tight pair of canvas trousers. Sometimes they wet them, you know, with a bucket of water or something. Not always. And I think this is my own opinion, that it was maybe to keep away any marks of bruising and things like this, keep the skin cool. But I've been through this myself. I mean, all boys are mischief, mate, as I've been up to mischief. And it stung, it really stung. I had 12.
Was that in the training school or on?
No, no, it was on the Amphion when I first joined.
What had you done to merit that?
I can't remember I was always getting up to mischief. But then nobody was really bothered about you getting up to mischief, but if you get it coming too much, then they give you a smack.
How old were you when you got in?
When I got there.
When you got the punishment?
Well, just barely 18. Barely 18.
Do you think you deserved it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. You knew that exactly the rules, and they were told that's the rules, and if you didn't stick by them, you copped it. Invariably, they used to make you work in the evenings, but if that didn't have any effect, especially if, like myself, I love the bloody Navy, excuse the expression, but some of the things they give me to do, I love doing, so I didn't mind being saucy again and getting some more. But I didn't like it very much when I had me canvas pants put on, held over the torpedo tubes, and a cane across the seat. Yeah. It brought me to a full stop. But it didn't do me any harm. It never wrapped me up in it. Everybody had been through it, so...
Did it stop you misbehaving?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, with a quick turn.
Was that the only time you were... Punished?
Oh, yes, yes. Because I liked what I was doing, you know, there's no way I would have spoiled that.
But you can't remember what it was for?
No, not really. No.
Were you always in trouble?
No. Only small things where the instructor in your class was getting a bit fed up with little niggling things. And they tend to upset the instructors far more than if you'd done one big thing.
What kind of a ship was the Amphion?
A cruiser. She carried 8 6-inch guns, 2 sets of anti-aircraft guns, 4-inch either side, and an aeroplane, a seaplane, which was catapulted off. Incidentally, I've been up in that. That's another story. They always had trouble finding somebody to ride behind as second passenger to the pilot when he was out testing his aircraft. And people that had been up with him never went up again. But one day, I saw on the notice board, I've always wanted to have a ride in the aeroplane. I've seen it go off. And a chap come along and he said, why don't you put your name up then? So I said, no problem. He did. So the next day I was called up and they told me what to do, and it was just after lunchtime. And we got up, and what happens is, it's not a turntable or anything, it's a catapult which is run on a track across the ship, but they extend out over the water, either side, almost trebling, if not more, the length of the runoff. But at the bottom, they've got a huge cartridge. Don't ask me, it was a long time ago, so I couldn't give you all the technical details, but it was like a huge cartridge for a 16-inch gun, it's about so fat, which is put into a breech. And there's a chap there standing with the trigger, looking up at the chap in the cockpit, and the plane is right out over the sea like that as it's rolling. And he's got to be quick, otherwise he'll send the plane straight into the bloody drink if it goes the wrong way, you see. And as an officer stands up by the funnel, which is looking down on everything. And when the moment is right, he brings down his green flag and whips up... No, brings down a red flag and puts up a green one. And the chap with the pistol fires it. And you've got an almighty clout right at the back of you. And she's shot along the runway and straight up. The pilot I was with was a Dutchman, and I can't remember his name. Not a Dutchman, Afrikaans. There's a difference. He came from Holland, or his parents did. But he was a brilliant pilot, but he did eventually kill himself on Table Mountain in a fog, these patches of fog that used to be the tablecloth that used to lay over Table Mountain.
What was your speciality in the work that you did on board ship?
I was attached to the telephone system, what do they call it, the exchange. And I was a telephone operator.
What did your work involve in action?
In that. Because this telephone system is connected up all round for action and for taking calls ashore, whatever it is. It's a huge thing, you know. It goes to all the guns. And all you do is you hear the chap saying, call the bridge, and you immediately connect him to the bridge. It may seem slow now, but it was quite clever in those days, you know.
Whereabouts in the ship would you be located?
Oh, down in the bow somewhere. I can't remember exactly where it was. It was a room about just slightly bigger than this one.
What was the room called?
The telephone exchange.
Who would be the senior man in charge in the room?
A petty officer, a torpedo man. They were the electrical people, well, up to this last war, anyway.
Now, coming on to the declaration of war, can you tell me what you remember about war being declared in September 39?
Yes, I do. I was serving out... wasn't serving, I was doing a course, an AA course out the AA range at Eastney, the other side of Portsmouth. You know that?
Yes.
And qualified there as anti-aircraft second class. And it was there when war was declared.
How did you react when you heard that we were at war?
Anticlimax, more than anything else. It's an anticlimax. I didn't know whether I was glad or not, but because I felt a bit guilty about the way we'd let Czechoslovakia be overrun after saying we would stand by them. And I thought to myself, well, it's going to reach us as well, sooner or later. So why the hell didn't they get in and help the Poles, which in actual fact is what they did as soon as Germans invaded.
Can you tell me about how you joined HMS Kashmir?
Yes, I was in barracks. I went from HMS Eklund down to Victory Barracks in Portsmouth. That was HMS Victory, it's Nelson now. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
And you wait there for a draft ship. For a draft to a ship. And I was only in there about a week. You can generally tell by your service certificates. And I joined HMS Kashmir at Wollstone in Southampton. She was built by Foster Thornycrofts. In actual fact, this is not a very common knowledge. She should have been HMS Javelin. But she was further ahead in being completed, the Javelin was. So they swapped Kashmir, swapped the two names. One was being built up on Tyneside, the other at Southampton. And Southampton one was ahead. Can you understand that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You don't mind me adding these other
points? No, please do. Please add what you can. This was in October 1939.
That's right. Yes, it was. I joined her on my... well, the day before my wedding day. I got married on the 10th. That was the 9th, I think you'll find.
And who was in charge of the ship?
The captain was there. That was King. Captain King, H.J. King, is there.
Did you have much to do with Captain King?
Well, on the tip, yes, quite a lot. He was very, I'm going to say aloof, but by the sheer nature of his job, he's got to be somebody apart. You know, he's got to be the God figure. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
First lieutenant's the one you have the row with and who gets on at you, kicks your ass or whatever, you know. But the captain, no. He's your dad, he's your mum, he's everything to you.
How did the ratings and the officers get on with each other in those days?
Very good indeed. Absolutely first class. The nucleus of the crew, you had a hardcore of professionals, a small hardcore, and the rest were trainees from people that were called up for hostilities. And we thought we'd have trouble with them, but we never did. They were sort of the earth. They were solicitors or butchers, carpenters, you name it. One even said he was a burglar. He was an ex-burglar.
Do you think it was true?
I believe it, yes. I've got a photograph to prove it. We caught him in a march in Birmingham where he lived. That's Blockton. He had black hair and it was always immaculate. He was on a gun. And in this march, it was the British Legion march through on 11th November. And he sent me a photograph of him in this march and a cross, and beneath it it says, "Burglar Blockton." Yes, he admitted it. I don't know, no way is he that now, whether it's the cause of the war and the people he lived with, but he never, certainly never did afterwards, you know. And trust, we had some right characters aboard there that would pinch your high teeth with the gold in them, but we never did. You could throw your money about on the table and never be touched.
So you never got people who stole from their shipmates?
No, nothing. Nothing. We had a couple of three conscripts that were coming aboard to be for officer rating. Wealthy people, and obviously hadn't had to look after themselves very much, and didn't wash themselves very much either. That didn't last very long because they were walked into the bathroom and scrubbed with a deck scrubbing brush. We had no more trouble with that. They were nice lads, don't misunderstand me. Yeah, and they loved being on board with us, yeah.
What kind of duties did Kashmir take up when you were first on board her?
Almost at once. We had to work up at Tobermory Bay in Scotland, and Captain Monkey Stevens was the local admiral. You may have heard of him.
I have.
And he was a right monkey too. Did only doing his job, though, believe me.
Why was he a monkey?
He's very strict. You turn you out if he'd had you out at 10 o'clock at night as action stations or man overboard, everybody has to turn to. Could it be snowing, raining? Still got out. There's a period of time that he really puts you through it to work you up into a good, sharp ship's company. We were fortunate, very fortunate with our crew because they threw themselves into everything he asked them to do with their heart and soul. They really did. But one day, he threw his hat onto the deck and turned round to a young lad that was there and shouted at him, "That's an incendiary, that's an incendiary." Of course, the nipper kicked it straight over the side, didn't he? That was his cap, the admiral's cap. He threw it on deck, "That's an incendiary." He said, "What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?" And he kicked it straight over the side. There he said, "That's a good lad." No, he said, "Go in and get it." Freezing bloody cold. That was the sort of man. No, he was all right.
Did the lad go in and get it?
Yes, he did. But they had boats already standing by for anything like that. Otherwise, he'd have killed him. He got it out. In actual fact, he left me with an extra tot of rum for that when he came out cold. You did know Stevens, Monkey Stevens, it's Admiral Stevens was his name, had ordered him to have that, but he got it. Perhaps he was initiative, I don't know. Anyway, we went to sea and joined up with convoy duties and then up north of Scotland, because there was large numbers of submarines were coming round the north of Scotland to try and miss the down in the Bay of Biscay where they were catching them and sneaking out into the Atlantic that way. And it was a time when we were pretty well off for destroyers. And they were spread out in a big long line. You couldn't see them in the rough seas. You just see a matchstick come up there and disappeared in the troughs.
Did you ever sink any of these U-boats at that time?
That particular one we did, yes.
Which one was that?
We was out with these sweeps, and you go a certain number of points. It's like box searches around. I couldn't tell you a great deal as I was young at the time and reasonably inexperienced at that particular sort of thing. But you could watch what was going on. And the fish sometimes, when they're in their shoals would go to the shape of a submarine. That's true. If you see them in your glass tanks when they swim around. And one day, or several times it's happened, we'd depth charge a shoal of fish and up they'd come by their hundreds, you know. When we gently cruise through them with baskets or wire to get some fish and chips for dinner. Yeah. But this particular time, it was something else again. And we got this echo on the Asdics. On the Asdics. And as soon as we heard it, if you passed it, you knew. You heard this. Normally it was just a ping and then a plunk, soft, no, nothing. That's when it's coming back and hitting you. But on this particular time, it went out ping with a almost like a bonk, and you knew straight away, and that's what came back to you. And I stopped when I heard it and listened, and you could see the excitement going on up there on the bridge. And somebody on the bridge said, "What, bloody fish again? You know, there's plenty of fishery in that area." And so the skipper decided to do a trial run and asked one of the other escorts, the sweep Icarus, I think it was, to come in and assist. And she held the echo while we did a run. Seeing as we found it, they let us have first bang at it. And sure enough, the fish, normally the fish would dart in all directions and disappear. This time it didn't. It was still there. So we asked for Kingston to come up, because she had the later type of Asdics than what we'd got, or things like that. And she held the echo while Icarus and herself. And it's very difficult to hold an echo with the explosions going on about how they did it on the Kingston, I'll never know, because it was just turmoil. And there was bits and pieces came up, but nothing, and then everything was there. It was there all day. The rest of the sweep just closed the gap and went on sweeping. And then quite late in the afternoon, one of the lookouts called out that there was a barrel on the water and give the bearing of it. Then he said, "There's another barrel on the water." It was the bow of the submarine coming up in the conning tower. But to him, at that distance, it looked like a barrel, still a barrel. And she surfaced and started to make for their guns. And a skipper called out to A gun, put a shot across the bow. Not like that, but in their official terms. And A gun fired. He was told to fire across the bows of it. Instead, I did it right under the conning tower, and bang. So whether he's open to be able to capture the bloody thing, but you never can, because they always scuttle them. And they all jumped off after that happened, and we picked them all up, every one of them. There was nobody hurt. And the submarine just sank. That was U-35.
So the gunner was ordered to put a shot across the bows, but he fired into the submarine.
That's right. Whether he intended to do that was something else again, but it may have been accident, might be the role of the ship at the time, you know. Things weren't very easy when you were something low in the water.
Did you see the action? Did you see?
Oh, yes. Open fire? Yes, I saw it come up.
How far away was it?
Let me see. It's 7 or 8 cables lengths, I suppose.
On the port or the starboard?
Let me see now. On the port side. That was where I stood, just by the searchlight platform. Because my gun at that time was a 4-inch HA just behind the searchlight platform. I was surprised they did that, because normally they let the 4-inch... generally looks after things like that, instead of using all the complex machinery to get the turrets into order, when all you wanted was a warning shot. But it didn't matter, you know. The skipper wasn't particularly worried about it.
What time of day was this? The late afternoon, did you say?
Yes, about tea time. About tea time.
And which month would that have been in?
That would be, I believe, the 30th of November. We've got it there, I think, the date somewhere.
1939?
Yes.
Where would the position have been?
Just off the Shetlands. South of the Shetlands. I've got the dates and all in my book there. I could...
Well, that's all right. That's good enough.
Yeah.
So everybody must have been absolutely delighted.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But then the captain made a broadcast over the ship. He says, don't get so delighted. You may be in the sights of another submarine, because they don't come out in ones. They come out in pairs or threes. But fortunately for us, there's so many destroyers about, the others have gone deep and just kept going. Well, we assume that anyway, you know.
Did you come to close quarters with the Germans?
Oh, yes. When they first come aboard, and I expect other people have experienced this as well, they were put... We cleared the boys' mess. We had about 8 to 10 boys on board, and they're in the forward mess deck down below, sitting on the keel, virtually. Worst possible place for young boys, you know. Should the ship be lost. And a sentry was put on the top of it, and they were fed. They were getting their rations, the same as everything else. Thing is, they were after coffee all the time, as we was drinking tea, and our coffee supply wasn't all that good. But anyway, they had what coffee there was, and they accepted the fact that when it was gone, it was they'd have to have tea, you know. But they were very quiet. There was only one amongst them that was absolutely Nazi from his fingertips.
What did he do?
He was arrogant. Arrogant.
Did you feel sorry for them?
Not really. No. The strange thing about it, both of us were new ships. They were both... new ships. The submarine had just finished its work up and was starting to go out on patrol, and we were also finished our work up and just going out on patrol, both for the same thing. What happened to them, or why they didn't do as well, I mean, the real old professional submarine captains would have wriggled out of that one as easy as anything, because we were so green ourselves. Unfortunately, something went wrong with them, and it was our side, not theirs.
Any other incidents you can remember?
On that particular thing?
On the Kashmir?
On the Kashmir.
In those early days?
In the early days. Only one, when we was... a monotonous job we had at that time. That was week in and week out. Convoy. From convoys coming from America, well, from all around the globe, and you get an appointment, and there'll be submarine attacks continuously. I expect you've read most of these sort of things, all the old ships going up. But one day there was one evening there was reports of an object on a certain bearing. I couldn't even remember what it was. But I know that we asked permission to the commodore of the convoy if we could leave to go and investigate this.